Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Dee Wallace. You know her as the mother in E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Cujo. She's now an accomplished author and radio host. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Miss Wallace, and thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Totally my pleasure. I think everyone knows you for going back, and you're a major part of our childhood. So I want to thank you so much for coming on my show.
You are so welcome, darling. They better know me.
I guarantee they do. So I always ask, my first question is always a question of inspiration. So I always ask, what inspired you to become an actress and who were your earliest influences?
I was born. I think I was just born to do this. And my biggest and first influence was my mother, who was a very beautiful actress in community theater and in our church.
Yeah, that's very good. So what about yourself did you think that you thought, I'm definitely going to go into acting? Like, did you just find yourself an extrovert and you were just so outgoing, or people just liked watching you? Did you just perform for your family or something? What was it that you just knew this was yours?
I started out being a dancer and was a soloist with a couple of companies in the Midwest. But I was just groomed to do this from when I was a very little girl. My mom and dad, I come from a very poor family, and they started me modeling and performing for music clubs in Kansas City and performing for the mayor.
And
quite frankly, a lot of it was so I could help pay the bills. But I just came out being a creative, you know. As long as I was dancing or putting on a skit or acting or performing somewhere, I was happy, and not much has changed.
You know, when I always do research on my guests on my show, and what I learned about you, I thought was so awesome, because like you, I have a degree in education, and I read that you had a degree from the University of Kansas in education. So what led you thinking about education? How far did you go into pursuing it? And when did you know it was time to turn around and pivot to showbiz?
Well, that's easy. I got my teaching degree because my mother needed it for her personal sanity. She needed to know. Well, back in the 60s, you have to remember that it was very important for a woman to have a career so that she could be independent, self-independent. So especially to my mom, who had raised three kids pretty much on her own. My father was a pretty severe alcoholic. And it was just important for me to give her that peace of mind. So I graduated with a teaching degree, minored in journalism and psychology, and taught a year of high school. But I knew if I didn't get out of there then, I was never gonna get out of there. So I wrote a letter to Hal Prince, who was the biggest producer on Broadway, who was looking for an unknown to star in a little night music, sent him this very cheesy letter and an even cheesier picture. And I wish I had it to this day. Oh my God, I wish I had that letter. And he called in 3 weeks and said, I want to fly you to New York to audition. And I had already bought a ticket. So, of course, I said, oh, Mr. Prince, you don't have to buy me a ticket. I already have one. He would have flown me first class and the whole thing. But that's how I was raised. So the day I landed in New York, I sent everything that belonged to me in a taxi cab, handed him the address and said, could you take these to this address? Because I'm going to Rockefeller Center to audition. And they got there. All of them got there. Yeah. So, yep, that was, I just kind of knew, you know, this was my dream. And I knew if I didn't leave then, I was probably going to stay stuck in feeling safe.
You know what I think is, I really wish you had kept that letter, because that letter, you know, now would be the famous letter that got D. Wallace started on your career in showbiz. Yeah. And that picture, I could have used it as your profile picture for the for the podcast episode.
Not a freaking chance that I am giving you that picture. Oh my God. It was on my bed in my jean shorts. Like, oh my God. Whatever possessed me to think that would be a good headshot to send. Right. God, I mean, that was my Kansas brain back then, right? But obviously he looked at it and said, this girl's got some balls. Maybe I should just bring her in. But, you know, I got down to the last five girls in the dancing and the acting. And then they said, okay, Mr. Prince would like to hear you sing. I said, oh, I didn't know we had to sing. And his assistant said, well, dear, it is a musical.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
So the first day in New York, I sang Happy Birthday in a very mediocre way for Hal Prince. Yeah.
You know, but what's incredible about that story is there's a lot of people out there, boys, girls, whatever, who always think to themselves, I wish to do this. You know what I'm saying? Or if I can just do this, I can get the job. I can just start my career. But they don't. For a reason, they don't have the courage to just do it.
They don't take any action. You got to believe in yourself enough to take action. When I got out to LA, it was very difficult to get in to see the casting directors. Mm. Actors couldn't get on the lot. So I did what we do in Kansas. I bake cookies for everybody. And I wrapped them up in this big cellophane with these fancy bows and put them in the back seat and went to the guard gate. And I said, hi, I have some deliveries. He said, okay, go on through. So I proceeded to take all the cookies to all the casting directors. And the last casting director was Reuben Cannon, who was the head of the studio. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, come on in. I love chocolate chip cookies. And I was sitting there talking to him. And he gets a call from the studio that the girl who's playing the waitress with five lines is sick. And her scene's up next. What should they do? And he covers the phone and he says, what size do you wear? I said, what size do you need? And that was my first film experience in LA.
You know, those stories are just incredible. I mean, and I think there's some listeners who talk or would think about ideas of things like luck, you know, you gotta be the right place, luck, stuff like that. But you put yourself in that position to be fortunate to get that job. I mean, by being so, once again, so ballsy to do the thing with the cookies and that savvy as hell. That's something that most people would never probably have thought about or had the guts to pursue.
You know, it was pretty naive. I'm a big believer in naivete.
The power of naivete.
You know, when you're naive, you don't have much fear. Mm. You just don't. You go, you know, everybody would say, oh my God, you're going to New York. New York's so dangerous. What makes you think they don't know you? You don't know anybody there. And I'm inside going, I'm going to go to New York and be an actress. Right. So I think you just have to go where your joy is, you know, and have faith and belief in yourself. And sometimes the stuff pays off and sometimes it doesn't. But if you don't put it out there, it's never going to pay off. Right.
I agree with you 100% on that one. I mean, I can't remember the exact phrase, but like those who, if you don't try, you never can accomplish anything, you know? People who don't try fail 100% of the time.
You bet. Let me talk to the word trying for a minute, because a lot of us go, well, I'm trying to do it. But what most of us mean by that is I'm thinking about doing it.
Mm.
And, you know and not to do is not yet to know, because you can't really build up the belief in yourself if you don't take steps to get out there.
Mm. I agree 100%. I mean, trying is not dipping your toes in the water and seeing, you know, how you feel about jumping. You really do have to go 100%. I guess the fear of failure keeps people from jumping in. But once again, the only people who ever succeed were the ones who took that plunge.
Yeah. And I just encourage people to look back at their childhoods from around conception to 8 years old and see what you were taught about risk taking, see what you were taught about your own magnificence, see what you were taught about the right to ask for what you want and get it. Because our brains are pretty locked in around our self-esteem and how we see ourselves in the world and our success by 8 years old. So whatever we're taught or modeled between conception and 8 years old, that's what we build the rest of our lives around. So if you keep hitting the same walls, look back at your childhood, because that usually is your parents' story. You have a right to write your own story now.
So I'm a teacher for high school, okay? High school age kids who are passed off to the age of 8, who've already, as you say, kind of modeled themselves out of what they're going to be successful or confidence at that moment. What can I do as a teacher or any adult who may have kids or who are now older than that to be able to go back and try to undo what was done in the past?
I don't think you want to undo anything. I think you want to redirect their brains into being excited about rewriting their story and who they really are and who they can be. So the more you can get them to focus on what they want, the more you can get them to focus on the joy of getting there, and the more you can feed back to them, this is the way I see you. I see you really successful. I think you're awesome. You know, when I was, I taught ninth and 10th grade. And I had this kid come up to me one afternoon and said, "Miss Wallace, I wouldn't get in your car today if I were you."
Whoa. That's pretty harsh.
You know, suggesting that it's going to blow up or something. And I looked at him and I said, "You know what? I don't believe you, because I see who you really are. And you're a really good kid. And I really enjoy having your creativity in my class." He ultimately became one of the best students I had.
Great.
You know, but he needed to know that he couldn't bluff his way through the world. And he needed somebody to start seeing him for who he really was. You know?
So how did you get yourself mentally there to make sure you had the confidence and make sure you had the self-awareness to be successful that you've became? What was it, your parents who helped you get there, or did you figure it out on your own?
Well, I think you come in with a natural propensity toward who you are and what you want to do. And then you're affected a lot, again, by the things you're taught verbally and what you're modeled. Now, my childhood was a real dichotomy, because we went to church. We went to Methodist church. My grandmother was a huge force in my life. We were very poor. My mom had to work all the time. My dad was an alcoholic. Most of his life couldn't hold down a job. And yet, my grandmother was this amazing painter. My mother was this amazing actress and the strongest woman I've ever known. People often ask me where I found that character in Cujo.
Yeah.
I grew up with her.
That's cool.
And even my dad was an entrepreneur, a very creative being who had been incredibly damaged in the war and never recovered. Mm. So we would sit and watch the hit parade, and I would hear, "You can do that, Dee Dee. You can get up there and perform like that." We'd watch the Miss America contest. "You can do that, Deanna." You know, and so I entered the Miss Kansas contest. But it was that dichotomy of you can do this and be careful because you never know what's going to happen in this family.
Mm.
Yeah. And somehow my inner strength just, I also had a really strong big brother that helped guide me.
Mm.
You know, let me sum up my family. My big brother was a minister who worked his way through seminary shooting pictures for Playboy. That's my family.
That's ironic as hell.
Yeah, that's my family. And so I spent half of my life doing horror films.
Yeah.
And the other half of my life teaching people how to heal themselves from their fears.
Mm. I mean, when you're thinking, when you grew up and you started, became, you know, more successful of an actress, were you picking roles that you knew had positive, a lot of them had positive messages, or at least a positive lead characters? For instance, you're in the movie E.T., yeah, which is obviously was one of the most beloved movies in movie history. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who grew up, you know, in that time period who saw it or who grew up now who hasn't seen it, loved it, and knows E.T. Like, that's a generational movie now, from one to the next. When you're in a movie like that, did you choose it because of what it was? Or did you choose it because, once again, it was available to you?
Well, Steven just called and offered it to me. And I went behind closed doors over at the studio and read it. And I remember calling my agent, and I remember exactly what I said to him. "I don't think this film's going to do much for me."
Oh, wow.
"But I think it's going to do a lot for the world, and I want to be a part of it."
I mean, once again, and obviously you're right. I mean, that movie has such power to it. And like I said, I once again, it's a movie that became iconic. What did the experience end up meaning to you?
Oh, it means I was a part of something that opens people's hearts and reminds them of the truth of love and friendship, which, dear God, do we need today?
Yes.
Yeah.
And some actors, when there's roles that they've done that are from iconic movies, some actors over time seem like they pull away from it and they want to, you know, they try to like almost ignore what they've done in the past. Some actors embrace what they've done in the past, even though, you know, as movies become more iconic. For you, has your appreciation for E.T. increased with time, or is it something that the impact for you has lessened?
I think it's always been impactful for me from the minute I read Melissa Mathison's script. And then I go out and I talk to people like this mother who came up to me with tears in her eyes and said, "Miss Wallace, I want you to know you're a part of a miracle in my life. My son is 10 years old and autistic, and I never heard him speak a word. And I just took him to see the re-release of E.T. And on the way home, he spoke every line that E.T. said in the film."
Oh, very cool.
That's a miracle.
Mm.
And that's the power of that film. Another young kid came up to me and said, "You know, when E.T. came out, I was in junior high school, and we lived in a really small town. And my mom and dad got divorced, and I was an outcast. None of the kids at school would talk to me. And then E.T. came out, and you were a single mother. And all of a sudden, I had permission to be included again.
Aww.
I mean, that movie is our Wizard of Oz. Mm. It surpasses, and it surpasses the blocks we have and reaches into our hearts and says, go here. This is where the truth is.
Mm. What do you think about E.T. became so universal that it has gone beyond the generation and also across cultures, that movie still has made it, found a way to resonate with all of us?
Because it makes you feel good. It makes you feel good, and it opens your heart. And that's really all we all want, right?
Yeah.
It, by the end of that movie, you're living in love. You are.
Mm.
Like, Tinkerbell and The Wizard of Oz and those movies that have lasted and lasted and lasted through time. The messages are, think happy thoughts and you fly, and you had the power all along, Dorothy and E.T. Keep your heart open and you will get back to your home of who you are.
There's such a wholesomeness to that movie. Do you think a movie like that could be made again now? Or do you think there has been movies like that since that have found that kind of wholesomeness and earnestness that, that it sometimes feels like movies now are a little more cynical than they were back,
Cynical, and we're just into so many special effects. The special effects become the movie instead of the message.
Mm.
You know, and yes, we need a lot more of these movies. And yes, I think the public would embrace them.
Mm. So you've dedicated a lot of your life to doing things that have reached out for other people. Yep. We're going to go into your book in just a bit that you've written. But one thing I want to mention as well, that you also do a weekly call-in show that is a radio show that you're hosting that is very much into helping people. And I was wondering what motivates you to do the show. What have you learned about yourself and maybe helped you with your writing, everything else, and how you conceptualize things and doing the show and talking to people?
Well, I'm a clairaudient channel, which means I hear messages. Now, anybody can do this. It's not a big woo-woo thing. You just have to learn how to open up your channel. So the more I did this work and the more I channeled, the more I came to understand that there was an actual formula for creating our lives. And if you followed that formula, you could create pretty much any subject in your life you wanted in the way you wanted if you really understood the formula and how to do it. So I started my call-in show, which is on Sundays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I created people being able to call in and ask questions about anything and getting the highest guidance from the channel. Because most of the time, what we think are our blocks, what we think are the problems, what we think why we're in the way or why things are happening, usually isn't the case.
Mm.
And so we need to be guided just to a clearer understanding. And the greatest thing that I do in my work is the ability to look into somebody's energy and put together where their blocks are and how they can redirect themselves to move out of that and lead freer lives.
So the people who call into you, is there a pattern that you find about what their problems are, or is it something they're, are they just reaching out because it's like almost like a loneliness? Is it something that was a specific issue that they have?
They have to have a specific question. But the thing challenging most of us is we were never taught that we are powerful creators. We're taught to wait for God or the guides or the angels or somebody else to tell us what to do. And then we have permission to move forward. And that's not the way it works. We were given free will. And so we have to consciously choose what we want to create and put our focus on that and commit to it. Feel a lot of love and joy around it and hold that focus until it starts coming into physical manifestation.
Do you find that what holds us back is waiting for someone to pull us along and point us in the right direction?
Yeah, and the word I hear the most is trying. Well, I'm trying to do that. I said, well, try and stand up. Either stand up or you don't, right?
Correct, 100%.
Can't keep trying to stand up.
Right.
That's what most people believe, that they're actually taking action when they think about taking action.
So what, as you mentioned, the idea of blocks, what blocks us, what do you find is the common block? Is it the waiting, or is there something else as well that is standing in the way of individuals to make that leap?
I think the biggest block is that we've all been taught we shouldn't and can't be powerful.
Okay.
From the time we're little, God won't love you if you're too powerful. Your friends are going to judge you if you're too powerful. Your parents tell you to sit down and shut up and be quiet if you're too powerful, right? From the time we're born, we're schooled in holding ourselves back into smaller versions of who we really are. And the fact is, when you love yourself and you claim how powerful you are in the highest way, not in an egotistical way, then you create so much more to share with everybody else. You have so much more to share with everybody else.
So for our listeners, for clarification, when you say powerful, do you mean assertive or do you mean something else?
No, I mean like Mother Teresa powerful.
Clarify that, a little bit more.
Well, that knowing that you are the source of your own creation.
Okay.
You're the power. You're the love. You're the choice. You're all of it. And we're taught that, well, we have to wait for a sign from God. And it works the other way around. It says very clearly in the I Am discourses, God cannot and will not intercede on your behalf without your clear direction. Because we on the physical plane are here to learn and understand how to work and direct energy and the responsibility we have in doing that.
So for those of us, once again, trying to search for our power, is it necessary to have faith, or are you talking about something more internal versus less than and less external?
Well, if you're talking about having faith in yourself, yeah. And loving yourself unconditionally. Loving yourself more. It's the more you love yourself. Look, Who do we want to give everything to? The people we love. And we never put ourselves on that list.
All right. I like that. So for our, like I said, for listeners listening, there is obviously those religious, for those who aren't religious, or let's say, or even atheist or agnostic, can they reach what you're discussing as well?
Absolutely, because what I'm teaching is brain science.
Okay. Can you go a little more about that?
Yeah. Look, brain science says whatever you focus on, you create more of in your life.
Okay.
Okay, that's what I teach. And you can't focus on anything consciously without clear choice, can you?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So if you're not clearly making a choice, you are saying, all right, I'm going to allow my subconscious to focus anywhere it wants to go. And that's usually childhood fears and limiting creation principles that we learned between conception and 8 years old. You know, we did a study one time, a bunch of my clients and I, in 1 hour of watching TV, you can get up to 50 messages of a disease you're going to get, when you're going to get it, what medication you should take, and all the horrible side effects you're going to get anyway, while they are showing you pictures of happy families and dogs. So what your brain says then is, oh, I get it. Being sick equals happiness.
Okay. I get
we
that.
Are hypnotized in this country to be sick.
I do find it fascinating as you're talking about, because once again, when you do TV, pushing of medications for any number of real or somewhat something most made up illnesses seems to be extremely prevalent and increasingly prevalent. And I think, I can't remember where I read it, but we are more medicated now than ever before in history.
Yes, we are.
Now, obviously.
And we're the most educated country. And we're somewhere in the teens in healthcare. It's unforgivable.
I mean, for those listeners, I'm sure, you know, some medications, obviously, some people definitely do need them. And I'm not going to discount those people.
Sure.
But
not saying that.
Right. No, I agree.
But
100%.
I am saying that whatever your brain focuses on, you are going to create more of. So whenever you see those pharmaceutical ads, say, thank you for sharing. I'm creating right now a healthy, beautiful body.
Yeah. Well, when you, so one thing that we were going to mention as well, that your book is born, right? Are these the topics that you're discussing in your book?
Absolutely. Born is a really simple, really easy to read, fun book that lays out every principle of the creation formula.
Okay. Can you give our listeners, can't give the whole book, but give a sense of the basics of that idea of the creation formula.
Oh my goodness. Well, make a choice.
Okay.
Commit to it. Feel love around it. Become conscious of all your thoughts and feelings during the day, your belief systems, so that if it does not serve that choice, you redirect your brain to think a different way. And you redirect your heart to feel love and joy around what you want. One of the biggest things I talk about in Born is what I call the three pillars. How I see myself, how I see the world, and how I see the world seeing me. Those three things all have to be in alignment for you to get what you want. Now, I see myself as an actress. But if I look out in the world and go, oh, I can't imagine a world out there that's gonna, you know, let me act. I mean, that's crazy for me to go to New York and I don't even, you know anybody. And then if I look at everybody out there and go, nobody's gonna see me as an actress. I mean, I haven't done anything. Why would anybody see me that way? But you see, you have to see it first. I couldn't go into Steven Spielberg's office and go, you know, Mr. Spielberg, I don't know if I can act, but I sure would like to star in your biggest hit of all time. Doesn't work that way. You know, you've got to know so the universe can work with you to deliver what you want.
So for those of those individuals who definitely need to start along this path, is there, what is the first step? Like, what is the first step they should make? Is it just, is it literally jumping in and finding that confidence, or is there a step to get going on this longer path?
Choose what you want.
Okay.
Write it down. Make a list. If you're looking for a partner, you better have a complete list of everything you want in that partner, like good health, financially solvent. Those are two really good things. Yeah. Somebody who loves and honors and respects you. Somebody you're going to have fun with. And whatever else is important to you. You, once you make that list, your subconscious knows what it is. And then when you think about creating that partner and magnetizing that partner to you, you feel a lot of love. I teach everybody to find their love place. And their love place is anything that opens your heart and makes you smile the minute you think of it. I go right to my doggy, Freedom, or my favorite place in Hawaii. Or my daughter when she was a baby, and I would hear her in the morning over her monitor going, mama, 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 mama. So my heart opens and I smile. It's so easy to find an unconditional loving place like that.
So as you're saying, it has to do with the choice and choosing what you want to find. I said making your list, everything like that. To do that, must the individual kind of find out who they are, or it does the list
look all you help have them to find know, it? All you have to do is look at your life and you'll see what you don't want.
Okay.
The problem is most people don't ever move on from that. This part of my life is not working. Not having any money for me is not working. What do I want? I want more money. I'm telling you, when I go out and speak, I'll have somebody come up on this stage and I'll say, all right, let's get started. What do you want? I don't want to have to worry about money so much. Great. What do you want? Well, I don't want to be stressed out about money. Great. What do you want? This can go on for 20 minutes until they get so pissed off at me. They go, I want more money. And I go, Fred, that's the first time you told me what you wanted. But you see, again, we're trained to say what we don't want in order to express what we do want. And the universe and your brain thinks in pictures. If you tell a little three-year-old, don't touch that TV, he'll look at you and he'll go right over and he'll touch that TV, because what does his brain see? Him touching the TV. So you can't tell yourself what you don't want. You can't tell the universe what you don't want. You can start there, and then you have to go, no. So I know what I don't want. I don't want the same asshole I was with last time. But that's not where you stop, because if you keep focused on the asshole, you will create another asshole just like him that looks, that's in a different suit.
Mm.
So, oh, let me make a list of what I do want. So I don't attract another asshole. And now I'm going to focus on creating this great guy or girl that I'm bringing in.
So how did you come about these ideas? Or this from your life experiences? Is this something that you, was it from through research? Or was there a point in your life where you had to find a direction? And this
every day.
Every day.
Every day. Sure. It's a journey of being conscious, baby. It's a journey of really being conscious. And, you know, I channeled when I was a little girl, which, by the way, most kids do, really. And, you know, like we call them their imaginary friends. Well, they're channeling information. One of my good friends adopted a little boy. And when he was about 4 years old, they were at a stoplight and there was a big semi across the intersection. And he said, "Look, mommy, that's how I died the last time I had another mommy."
Oh, wow.
And she started asking him. And he said, "Yeah, you know, we were going across the street and that a big truck just like that one hit us, you know, and then I came back. But I picked a family that didn't want me so I could be with you."
Aw.
Crazy, huh? But true. And there's lots of books that recount stories of kids' stories like this.
So since you mentioned that a lot of this, how we form ourselves comes between when we're born to 8 years old, is that what inspired you to write your children's book called, I'm going to get the name wrong, I do apologize, Bupalapoo, and the I Love Me.
What's so funny is that kids have no problem in saying that name at all. But adults get into our mental minds and go, "Oh, I've got to say this right." You know, kids just say, "Bupalapaloo, Bupalapaloo." They just have so much fun. But I, again, because our brains are so locked in by 8 years old, I think it is imperative to get books out right now that parents can start in a fun way teaching their children the concepts of self-creation. And so this is the first book in a series of those books.
So is the point of the book more to deliver the message or to start the conversation?
Both.
Both.
How can you start a conversation if you don't deliver the message?
True, true. I get what you're saying on that. I guess my question is, because obviously with children, is it in a way to try to get the parents to also connect with the ideas as well? Or is it expected the parents already?
Hell yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. Because again, a lot of us think we understand and we're not living it. You know? So the first book, the little bear, the little boy's all upset. You know, daddy thinks he's not strong enough and grandma thinks he's not old enough and mommy thinks he's not a good enough friend. And Bupa says, "Well, you haven't asked the most important person." And the little boy goes, "Well, who's that?" And Bupa says, "You. Who do you think you are?" Because one of the first things we have to do is to define ourselves. And how we define ourselves is the direction to our energy.
So how does, how does it work towards, and what is about the nature of that character that makes him a great deliverer of the message to the protagonist?
Well, first of all, you're not hitting a kid over the head with it. Second of all, it's everything a child can relate to, all his fears. And the illustrations are so beautiful and so soft. They were done by an Italian artist named Vincenzo Lodato, who used to work for Disney. And he and I hooked up, and the illustrations of all of them are just, you can see, I don't know if you can see them.
Yeah, I can see them.
Yeah, they're just sweet and beautiful. And, you know, these books are written for like 3, 4, 5.
Mm. How challenging is it to deliver a story with a good message and still, so in a such a way that the children still get the entertainment and kind of just absorb it without being like preached at by it? You know, say, because kids feel like something they back on. Oh, I'm just asking.
That the book doesn't preach at all. And then, you know, you can close the book. What I would do as a parent is, who do you think you are, sweetheart? Are you strong? Are you, because mommy sees you strong. Are you brave? Are you a good friend? Well, maybe not so much. Oh, well, how could we be a better friend? And that's what we need to be doing with ourselves.
So what have the reactions been like so far by the kids? Have you finding that they are really enjoying
it?
That they're loving it? Fantastic.
They love it. Yeah. Bubba becomes their friend, kind of their confidant.
Oh, is there going to be other stories that you're going to write with the character?
Yeah. This is the first in a series.
Fantastic. When can they expect the others? And where can they find the first one?
When I have time. They can find both Bubbalabaloo and Born on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Fantastic.
Or if they want a personally autographed copy, they can email me at imdwallace.com. And I will send you off that you can order it on my website and I'll get it off to you with its signature.
That's awesome. So what's next from you?
Oh my gosh. Well, I just finished a movie at 1 a.m. last night, this morning. I'm getting ready to do 2 really big healing programs. And I'm leaving when? About mid-April to do another film in Texas.
Very cool.
So, you know, I'm just doing everything I love to do, baby. It's really exciting.
That's an amazing life to live, to be able to say you basically can do whatever you want to do at this point. That's fantastic.
I create my life that way.
I think that's awesome. And I want to thank you, Ms. Wallace, so much for talking with me. It was a fantastic conversation. And I think I learned a lot about that.
Well, it was a great interview. You asked some really pertinent questions, and I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Have a fantastic night. And any links you can send over for the book and anything else you want to do, I'll make sure we post it on your interview notes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. You too. And